You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Before we get to the show tonight, I'd like to acknowledge several people. My video producer, Promethean Reach, who has uploaded many years of my radio interviews freely on YouTube. Type in Zany Mystic Radio and be sure to check out his other channels. My friend in the United Kingdom, Veronica Keane, who tirelessly works to bring truth, freedom, and enlightenment to the planet. You can find her at www.montaguekeane.com. And I also want to acknowledge my good friend, Anelia Benz, for inspiring millions to raise their vibration. She continues to be an inspiration to me, and thank you for your ongoing support. You can find her at www.ascension101.com. Tonight's guest is someone I've admired for many years, G. Edward Griffin, not just for his courageous reporting of the truth, but his integrity and unwavering commitment to that truth. He is an American film producer, author, and health advocate. He's best known for his 1994 book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, an expose of the Federal Reserve System as a private banking cartel. He was one of the producers of the first movie to reveal the chemtrail geoengineering cover-up, What in the World Are They Spraying?, and the follow-up movie, Why in the World Are They Spraying?, featuring Michael Murphy, a frequent guest on my show. You can find out more and sign up for free unfiltered news at his website, www.realityzone.com. So let's welcome Ed to the show now. Hi, Ed. How are you?
I'm doing great, Vance. Thanks for inviting me to your show.
Well, it's a great honor to have you. And, you know, it's interesting that this is my last show in 2013, and we just celebrated, if you can call it that, the 100-year anniversary of the Federal Reserve, 100 years of unabated and escalating rape and pillage of the United States. So,
yes, yes.
With all the information you and others have shared, what is keeping this monstrous illegal cartel going?
Well, that's a much more complicated question than it seems. At first, my first reaction is to go back and pay attention to your word celebrate. I think there is something to celebrate, and that is the fact that we're still here. I mean, this with this short circuit across our circuit board, our financial circuit board, it's amazing that we haven't arced and sparked out completely. But you mentioned the key to the answer to the question a moment ago. It's a cartel. Most people think the Federal Reserve is a government agency. It's here to, you know, to protect the economy, protect the American people, and all that other part of the myth. When in fact, it's a banking cartel, no different really than a banana cartel or an oil cartel. Just happens to be a banking cartel. And what keeps it alive? Well, two things. Obviously, it has great power, doesn't it? Any time that you give a small group of people the power to create the nation's money, you have given it really the absolute power over the nation, because everyone knows the old adage, he who has the gold makes the rules. That is the golden rule. And if you go one step further than that and say who creates the gold or creates the money is even assured more power, because he always has it. And basically, that's what we've got here. Is back in 1913, the banks decided that they would head off at the pass a political movement which was growing as a result of a lot of concern on the part of the American people over this concentration of financial power in New York, you know, Wall Street and the financial industry. And they wanted Congress to pass a law to control that power. And so the banks decided that this was coming. And shrewd as they were and are, they decided it's silly to stand back and just wait for this to happen and deal with it after it happens. They decided to get at the head of the parade themselves, and they would be the advocates for banking reform, and they would actually write the rules. And of course, they didn't want anybody to know that they were writing it. They had to conceal that fact, but they are the ones that actually drafted the Federal Reserve Act. It was a cartel agreement, but they polished it up and presented it in such a way and wrote it in terms and phrases that made it sound like legislation, and they took it to Congress, and those idiots in Washington passed it into law. So now we have a cartel agreement passed into law, and the so-called rules, which were to control this dangerous financial power, those rules were written by the financial power itself, and they were well written to make sure that that power was never challenged. In fact, it even grew since that date. And now we have this creature from Jekyll Island, Jekyll Island being, of course, the name of the island on which that charter was written in secret. And so now we have this creature from Jekyll Island. It's a big snorter. It's roaming around the landscape, and it's very powerful. And people are afraid of it, and many people are beholden to it, especially congressmen and senators. They know that it's a death knell to their political careers if they say anything or especially do anything against the cartel. So that's half of the reason. And the other reason is that people don't know about it, really. What I'm just saying here, what I have said in the last couple of minutes, probably comes as a great shock to most people. And their first reaction would be, oh, I don't believe that. I haven't heard that before. I went to school. I studied the Federal Reserve. That wasn't in the textbooks. And so that's the other reason. It's a combination of power on the part of the Fed and lack of information on the part of the people.
Yes, and, you know, it seems to me that it's time for people to wake up and smell the coffee. Over the years since 1913, did any of the presidents attempt to alter this? I think, wasn't Kennedy about to move to print money before he was assassinated?
Well, that is one of the myths that is very popular. Of course, President Kennedy was very popular, and there's a certain instinct for justice there. We'd like to think that one of the reasons that Kennedy was assassinated because he crossed swords with these bad people. But in my research, Vance, that really doesn't hold up under close evaluation. Okay. I've written about that, as a matter of fact, and anybody that wants to see my research on it and my reasons for coming to an opposite viewpoint, it's all posted on our website. One that you didn't mention, by the way, we have a think tank organization called Freedom Force International. And that's at freedomforceinternational.org. And in a section there on monetary issues, there's a quite a lengthy dissertation on that issue. I call it the JFK myth. But my conclusion was that was not the reason Kennedy was assassinated at all. And when you look at that executive order that he signed, I doubt if he ever read it. It was just a housekeeping thing. It was something. Yeah, you know, it's a great story, but it doesn't hold up, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah. Now, what about? Okay, we know that they're printing up money and that there's an enormous amount of float and debt floating around the globe, and that this is one of the tactics that they use, which is a part of the the system of creating problems and then creating the reaction and then having the reaction, and then they have the solution handy, which is part of the United Nations and this whole interlocking web of corporations. What do you see as being the result of all these bailouts that and the printing of money, which is going on in the billions of dollars every month now, that the Federal Reserve is pumping into their friends around the globe?
Well, there are a lot of effects of that, of course. It's not all just one thing. One of the less obvious things about it is that the true nature of the Federal Reserve is becoming more publicly observable. Up until fairly recently, until about 2008, when all of this bailout really took on accelerated form, up until that time, all of this process was fairly hidden from view. It was never in the news very much. All the bailouts of the past couple of decades were usually buried in the financial news and that kind of thing. But when it accelerated from mere millions and then to billions and then finally to trillions of dollars at a pass, it kind of burst into the front page of the newspaper, and people people are becoming aware of this fantastic expansion of the money supply. Not quite sure what it means, but they know that it's big. Something big is coming down. But when you look at the effect of all of that, it was all planned on Jekyll Island. That was one of the things they discussed at that secret meeting, which was how to pass along the inevitable losses of the system that they had created. They knew that this would lead to bubbles, to booms and busts and all that sort of thing, and they knew that it would at some point in the future probably clog up the system and explode. And how are we going to get out of this? We got to pass this on to the taxpayers, right? And so that was all planned well ahead, and they decided that they would do it in the form of bailouts. And, of course, it had to be sold. You just don't go to Congress and say, give us another $100 billion or $1 trillion. We need the money. You've got to present it in such a way that it sounds like you're patriotic and that you really care about the people. And so the strategy was established well in the beginning that every time the banks would go bankrupt, every time they would make a lot of bad loans, or every time, anything would happen to the banks, and they would start to get a little bit of red ink there on their bottom line, they would go to Congress and they'd say, look, if we don't infuse fresh money into the banking system, why, the banks may fail. Now, if the banks fail, America is in big trouble. America will fail. People will lose their jobs. Babies will go without milk. People will commit suicide, and we may be vulnerable. Maybe China will send an atomic bomb over to us because we're weak. All of this stuff, it's all fear-based, and they knew that. And so every time the banks get into trouble because they loan too much money to some deadbeat corporation or to some third world country, knowing full well that those loans cannot be paid, they knew that sooner or later they'd go into default. But they also knew that down the line they could go to Congress and say, look, now it's time to put the taxpayers in harness. We've got to save America. Do your patriotic thing. So it was a pattern that was well established long ago. Now it's so huge, and the numbers are so obviously out of whack that it's visible. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that mean? Another result of all of this is that the money supply is expanding at a rate never before seen in history. And the United States has not been the only country that's expanded the money supply like that. But all of the others in history that did so have gone belly up. They've destroyed themselves. It's kind of a prolonged act of suicide, economic suicide. And the United States is following that exact same principle. But all of a sudden, in the last decade, the rate of this process has been greatly accelerated to something that history has never seen before. So nobody knows how it's going to look when that bubble finally bursts totally. But we all know, anybody that's seen anything of history knows that when it happens, it's not going to be pretty.
Well, yes, and I think we all feel this because we're feeling it in the pocketbook and everywhere we go and everywhere we look. It's been documented by many people, yourself included, no doubt, that all of the wars and the depressions are created by these bankers, the cartels, and that they provide arms to both sides so that they can make money and profit off of them. And with all the corporations that are tied into the war industry now, this is all part of the intentional creation of a terrorist war, ongoing war situation. Are we ever going to unbury ourselves from this, or is the inevitable result going to be some kind of showdown in the okay, not okay corral?
Well, I think it depends on how quickly the people of the world, it's not just an American problem, but how quickly people of the world wake up to this game. Right now, unfortunately, most people, they know there's something wrong, but they don't know that the very people they're turning to for solutions are the ones who created the problem. Mm-hmm. So as long as that condition remains, as long as we continue to play the Republican versus the Democrat game, for example, mm-hmm. thinking that the solution is, well, which party are you going to vote for? As long as we're thinking at that right. level, then right. the answer is no, it's never going to change. But, there are people like myself and many others who are trying to break through that paradigm.
Well, I know Catherine Austin Fitz was one of the people who's been speaking up, and other people like Gerald Celeni and Max Kaiser and John Rappaport, Gary Webb, Joseph Farrell, they're all, and many others are speaking out. But it seems that since the mainstream media is so tightly controlled, and the purse strings are pulled by the same fingers that run everything in the world, that we're not getting the information, and if people don't see it on television, they just poo-poo it or consider it a conspiracy theory.
Well, that's the problem. That's it. However, the alternative media is gaining, and, mm-hmm. Of course, that's the reason that the powers that be are so determined to clamp down on the Internet. They want to get total control over that, because had it not been for the Internet, I think the game would have been over a long time ago.
Oh, yes. And the Internet was devised by the Department of Defense, wasn't it?
Well, that's what I understand. I don't think anybody foresaw what it would do to the democratization of information. But they know now, and so they're trying to demonize it. And, you know, they get all the gum-chewing public to think, oh, yeah, we got to give control of the Internet over to these wise, trustworthy politicians. Otherwise, we'll have pornography and crime and child abuse and terrorism.
Oh, well, the ironic part of all that is that they've got their pants are down on that one.
Oh, yeah.
I think the verdict's out that, you know, and many of the people who are in the know realize that the pedophilia industry is fueled by the people at the top of the pyramid. Yeah. You know, you've got royal families and the elite running all of that stuff and the global sex trade, so they can't really be pointing too many fingers in that department. In fact, most of them probably have movies on them that are holding them hostage.
Well, it could be. I hadn't thought much about that, but I do know that it's certainly not unreasonable to encourage all of this sort of thing so that the public can be properly concerned, you
right.
know?
Right.
If you, well, you mentioned a moment ago, you create the problem, then you offer the solution to the problem, and the solution includes giving you more power over society. So
yeah.
I'm sure that the ones who want to control the Internet are not unhappy at all to see child pornography on the Internet. They love it, because
yes.
that way
yes.
people will be concerned and say, yes, we need stricter laws, you know.
Yep.
Plays
yep.
right into their hands. Mm-hmm.
And then that brings us to false flag events, and many people, myself included, are pretty much convinced that 9/11 and most of the major events that happen are false flags, including the Fukushima accident, which was no accident. And we know that HAARP is one of the engineered technologies that is being used for weather wars. And that takes us into the chemtrails, which are extremely disturbing to a growing number of people who are paying attention up to our skies. It seems that there's hardly a day that goes by without seeing them in the skies and recognizing that they're seeding all kinds of horrific things, chemicals and metals and blood and bacteria, that's just raining down on the populace, and that this is increasing our proclivity for diseases, which are sending us into hospitals and madhouses and, you know, running for psychiatric evaluations. So what prompted you to be behind one of the first major chemtrail movies, which is What on Earth Are They Spraying?
Well, it's not a very dramatic story, unfortunately. It's just that you mentioned Michael Murphy before. He and Paul Wittenberger were producing a documentary on, I've forgotten what the topic was. It was closer to the monetary issue. Uh-huh. And they asked for an interview, came out to the house, and we did the camera work in my living room. And at the end, I asked the guy, I said, what are you working on besides this? And they said, well, we've been putting together material for a documentary on chemtrails. They said, do you know anything about it? And I said, oh, yeah, a little bit. I know one thing, there's something funny going on. That those aren't just contrails. That's about all I know. And so I said, well, you know, can I help you in any way? Because I thought that was good that they were researching that. And they said, well, yeah, we're having trouble getting money together to finish it. So that was my role, really. I wanted to encourage the boys, and I helped them raise money to finish the productions, and that's why I got called producer. You know, that's what producer normally means. I gave some advice and my opinion on some things, but it's primarily their work. And but I have learned a lot about this this mystery, so-called, since then.
Well, you know, I have to say that that was a very good movie, and so was their follow-up. Why on earth are they spraying?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, now we're seeing that there is a growing awareness as a result of that and many other efforts to bring the attention to the American public and the global populace, because this is not just an American problem. This is a global problem, and it has to have global awakening and awareness to focus attention on what's been going on for 10, 15, 20 years behind our backs. It's absolutely an atrocious affront to our health and to our sanity to think that there are things being rained down upon us that have horrible effects on the body. And I know you've done a lot of research on cancer, and you've had some findings on that that are not that are helpful to people. And cancer is taking off like there's no tomorrow. What have you found out about the cancer problem?
Well, now that is my bailiwick on that one. I don't have to rely on any other sources for that, because I've done my homework. One of the first books I produced was published back in 1974, called World Without Cancer, The Story of Vitamin B17. Mm-hmm. And that was a result of about a five-year research project, and I really got pretty heavily into it with doctors and scientists and authors, you know, all over the world. And basically, to condense that story into a paragraph, what I found from working with scientists, who, of course, I'm not a scientist. I went through school studying speech and communication, and man, science was not my field. But, you know, as a writer, when you get into a topic, you just plunge yourself into it. And I came out the other side knowing a couple of scientific words, and I understood what the process was that they were talking about. And what I learned from these scientists, and they were very, you know, very patient in teaching me all this, was that cancer, in their view and mine too, cancer is not something that happens to you. It's not something you get. It's not caused by something. It's caused by the lack of something.
Mm.
It's the lack of something. It's like all of the chronic metabolic diseases, like you know, scurvy, pellagra, pernicious anemia. In the beginning, people thought all of those diseases were caused by bugs or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was discovered, no, it was just caused by the lack of vitamin C or vitamin B12 or some mineral. Some goiters were caused by lack of iodine. And all of these things are caused by the lack of something. And these doctors and scientists that were teaching me all of this said that's what cancer is. It's the lack of an essential food factor. So I said, well, what's this food factor? And they told me it was in nature. It's called amygdalin. That's the official name for it. It's been around for a long time. You'll find it described in the Pharmacopoeia that was published in Europe, I guess by now, 100 years ago. Well-known chemical. And in modern times, where it was purified and refined and concentrated for use in cancer therapy, the doctors that did that called it Laetril. Because it that word Laetril kind of relates to the Lievo rotation of the crystalline structure of the substance, so they called it Laetril, and because it's in the nitrilicide family, so they just combined those two words. But it's really amygdalin, and the amygdalin molecule is pretty interesting. It's a simple molecule. It's got four components, two of glucose or sugar, basic sugar, and it's combined with one molecule of cyanide and one molecule of benzaldehyde. And, of course, that's what scares people. They, you know, cyanide, you're not going to eat that stuff, are you? They kill people with cyanide, right? You know, of course, that's true. But just because cyanide is in a compound doesn't mean that it is cyanide. It's a cyanide compound, which is not necessarily toxic at all. Cyanide is a gas. You know, release it, it's a gaseous form. And it's true, if you get a good whiff of cyanide, pure cyanide, you're in big trouble. it'll cause your heart to stop, and if that didn't work, you'd just die of toxicity anyway. But locked in a combination, in a compound, it's not necessarily toxic at all. For example, vitamin B12 has cyanide in it. It's called cyanocobalamin.
Mm-hmm,
that's its
mm-hmm.
official name. Well, that means that we would all be dead without cyanide, because we couldn't live without vitamin B12. So just because something has cyanide in it is not the end of the story. It's just the beginning of the story. And so this is, I'm going to try and shorten this down to give you the sort of the bird's eye view of how it works.
Okay.
What you need to worry about with this cyanide-bearing compound called amygdalin is what releases the cyanide and the benzaldehyde, which also is toxic. So it's what releases those things, what breaks the molecule apart. And they know what it is. It's an enzyme. It's called beta-glucosidase. All right, big, long name. I call it, in my book, I call it the unlocking enzyme. A little easier to remember. And that is exactly what it does. When this amygdalin molecule comes in contact with that enzyme, it does break it apart, unlocks, and releases the cyanide, toxic, and the benzaldehyde, toxic. And boy, look out. Well, where do you find that enzyme? Well, the amazing answer is you find that enzyme in cancer cells, and only in cancer cells. So it's a beautiful mechanism of nature. If you have cancer developing and you are eating foods that are rich in this substance, and it's found in nature, in a lot of foods, primitive societies have them. That's why primitive societies have less cancer. They're eating more of these types of foods. If you find foods that have this amygdalin in them, and you've eaten some, and a cancer cell forms, the amygdalin comes in contact with the enzyme, and the enzyme causes the cancer to commit suicide. And the cells around it, which are not cancer, are not affected at all. As a matter of fact, they're actually nourished by the byproduct of the of the combination. So there you have it, and it's so simple and so pure, and nobody denies that that's the mechanism by which it works, because you can do it. They have done it in the laboratory. They've done it in the test tube. You can see this actually work. Where the controversy comes in is in the politics. The science science of cancer is simple. The politics is really complicated. Well, In a nutshell, that's really what it's all about, because the politics involves, this is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and you can imagine how many people would be looking for another kind of a job if cancer were suddenly eliminated overnight, which I think it could be.
And also the need for dependence on oil and primitive technologies like nuclear power and fossil fuels and the rest of it that are just destroying the planet.
Well, you know, Vance, we were talking a moment ago about the fact that the Federal Reserve is a cartel.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at all of these industries, look at the health industry. It's a cartel.
Mm-hmm.
And about to be even more cartelized if Obamacare ever gets all the way through. Look at the oil industry, the energy industry. It's a cartel. You know, the military industry, it's a cartel. These companies, they may appear to be competitors, but they work very closely together to dominate their field. And everywhere you look, you find cartels actually running things today. And that's the problem, because without free enterprise competition, you know, these little monopolies or huge monopolies form, and then they have control over your life.
Yes, absolutely. Every aspect of our lives.
Yes.
It's really a disturbing disturbing thing to wake up and see what's happening around the world and how much we are controlled and manipulated. One of the things that I'm curious about is that with the Fukushima event, that seems to be still holding some merit as far as people being concerned about it. I'm having a difficult time getting a handle on what's really going on. I know that radiation leaks are fairly common, more common than we're told, but what are your findings about the radiation that's coming from Fukushima, which could continue to escalate for decades or maybe even hundreds of years?
Well, I don't have any firsthand information on this. We cover it, I forgot to mention earlier, but we have a weekly news service called Unfiltered News. I personally publish that, and I urge everybody to come to realityzone.com and sign up for it. It's free. And in this news service, we cover the Fukushima radiation leaks pretty carefully. Almost every week there's some new story, a new report, I should say, out of Japan, and they're constantly discovering old leaks that are not stopped and new leaks they haven't found before and all kinds of cover-up. Nobody wants to admit how strong it is, and then we find out, you know, 6 months later, well, it was really, everybody knew it was really bad 6 months ago, but they didn't want to say, and they, all of this sort of thing. But all I can go on are these news reports that are coming out of Japan. I haven't gone over there personally and interviewed these people or anything like that. But I do know this. There's something really bad going on there, and it's affecting the United States because the water currents and the air currents are bringing a lot of that pollution over to the Pacific Northwest shores. And now I understand it's drifting across the Canadian border and the northern part of the United States and gradually reaching over to the eastern seaboard as well. So it's serious.
Yes, very serious. By the way, I am subscribed for Reality Zone, and I really appreciate your work on that, and I read it every week.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank
you. It's a wonderful post, and I like the way that you bring a multitude of different issues to the table and present them fairly so that we have a chance to see what the real news is going on. I just noticed that there was a video by a man who had a radiation monitor, and he was walking towards the beach in San Francisco, and the radiation, the monitor, it's an electronic one, started to get warm as he hit the beach, and it, when it hit the beach, it doubled. So we know that things are going on there. We're not being told the truth, and I don't think that we're being told any of the truth, really, by the governments or the politicians. I think that we need to start turning to other resources for that information. And one of the things that I'm also concerned about is the way the corporations are dumping nuclear waste all over the country, burying it underground in tunnels, saying that they'll be safe. So many corporations just funnel it off to the cartels that promise to dispose of it properly. And some of those cartels are mafia cartels, and they take them in barrels and run them out to sea far enough to not be seen and dump the barrels in the ocean. Now, those barrels have a life of, you know, whatever metal they're put into, so we know that those are all going, they're time bombs.
Yeah.
And they also contract with various states in the United States to shove this nuclear waste under the carpet, you know, underground. And so this is going something that's going to come home to roost in the very near future. I'm wondering how this may be affecting you personally and how it concerns us all globally.
Well, just to ask the question is almost to provide the answer, isn't it? Because, as you say, it's a time bomb, and I'm sure we don't know the whole of it. When you mentioned the fact that the mafia has been getting the contracts to dispose of nuclear waste, it's almost funny, but my sense of humor is so bad, I was tempted to say, well, thank God we didn't trust the government to do it. But, you know, when you think about it, there's not an awful lot of difference. but, no, that makes a joke out of something very serious, and I don't know how we deal with that. I suppose we better get serious about finding ways to detoxify ourselves. That's one of the reasons we solidly endorsed a product, which you may have noticed that we put on our website a few months ago, called Folium. It comes out of the Georgia region in Russia, you know. And and they use this successfully in treating victims of Chernobyl. And it's basically an herbal product, and it has herbs and all kinds of things, including the pine tree bark, which is a source of antioxidants, but it's more than an antioxidant. Anyway, make a long story short, I saw the results on that and the laboratory tests that were done by a doctor friend of mine on his patients, and it really knocked the heck out of radioactive levels. So we started to put that on our website. So anybody is interested in what they can do to at least protect themselves and their family, that's a start. But it's certainly not the whole story. We need to somehow get rid of this toxic dumps, these dumps around the world. How we do that, I have no idea.
Mm. Well, at least we're talking about the problem, and that's bringing it out onto the table so we can. It's like the elephant in the room. We all know it's there, but nobody wants to look at it. So
yeah.
One of the things I'm kind of curious, I'm prompted to ask you, I don't know why, but there have been major manipulations with the stock market, as you know, and of course the silver and gold market is wonky right now. People are wondering what is a safe haven. Of course, the safest haven is to invest in yourself and your family, but what's going on with the gold and silver market, and why is it being hammered by J.P. Morgan Chase and others who are selling silver certificates, and they don't have the stuff to back it up?
Well, that's the answer right there, isn't it? They don't have the stuff to back it up. So it's okay to sell something. You can make a lot of profit on selling something if you don't have to deliver the product. And that's basically what the what Morgan and the bullion banks have been doing for a long, long time. So the banks, the bullion banks in particular, are not anxious to see the price of gold or silver rise to its true level, and they will play all kinds of games by basically selling short. That's one of the ways they describe it, which means they're selling things they don't have, thinking that if the time should come when the people that bought this material ever want to actually take physical delivery, well, then they'll go into the market and buy it at whatever the current market price is. So, therefore, you've got to keep the current market price down.
Right.
And the way they do that is they keep selling more of the stuff they don't have to keep the current market price down. How long can you play that game? I wouldn't have thought they could have played it this long, but they are. Sooner or later, you can't kick the can down this road any further. I think it's coming pretty close. I hate to predict in terms of dates because I'm usually wrong on that, but I do know they can't continue it forever.
Right. Now, what about, there are a couple of other issues that affect us all, and I think that they need to be brought out into the daylight, and that is the use of vaccinations over the years, and you've probably done some research and homework on this subject. Because it seems that the vaccinations can be deadly. I personally opt to not use them at all because of what's in them and my own research. But what have you found about them?
Well, I found pretty much what you have found there, Vince. I wouldn't accept a vaccine unless they had a bayonet pointed at my throat, but most people, rush to the store. I went to the drugstore the other day and said, get your flu shot here, now.
Yeah, right.
Wow, and these people actually do that. But anyway, my own conclusion is that these vaccines are primarily a money-making deal for the pharmaceutical industry. And again, they play on fear. Mm-hmm. First of all, I don't think the vaccines work. I don't think they really do what they say they do.
Right.
And secondly, I think that they're loaded with toxic components, particularly mercury.
Mercury,
and, primarily. And
yep.
other things, too. And that the even if they did work, I think the risk-reward ratio would be on the negative side because of the side effects far outweigh the good effects that they theoretically bring in. So that, in a nutshell, is my conclusion.
No, I like it. I would agree with you 100%. And then some. Now, another topic that people, this is a hot button for everybody, and it is for me because it's a major health concern, and I was just looking at some pictures of from some of the health sites that I follow, and that is the subject of GMOs. My own research has showed that they are absolutely toxic when you put bacteria into plants, and you put other things that are engineered into those plants, you have tampered with something that was already working, and the findings are not entirely back yet, but they're pretty much showing the same thing that the GMO industry is not showing us, and that is that they absolutely destroy your organic organs. What have you done to find out more about GMOs and the effects that they have on the human body?
Well, here again, we're dealing with another cartel, the food industry, and that's closely aligned with the chemical industry.
Mm-hmm.
GMO crops, of course, are being engineered so that they can be a source of revenue for the pesticides and insecticides that are being sold along with those crops. So there's a close tie between the food seed companies and the chemical companies and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But that aside, just because somebody's making money on something is not necessarily bad. I think if a company or an individual is doing a service and it's a good service, they should make a lot of money. I'm all for that.
Right.
But what are these things doing? All the evidence I've seen so far is that the GMO seeds and plants that are produced may have, and I'm going to put quotes around that, may have some beneficial short-term effect on productivity or yields for crops. Maybe they get a higher yield per acre or more crops per year or something like that for a short period of time until finally nature catches up to it, and then that effect suddenly disappears. Some of the bugs which were supposed to not be able to affect these crops suddenly evolve into superbugs, and now they're even worse than ever before, all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So my feeling is, from the evidence I have seen so far, is that even the short-term beneficial effects from GMO products are turning out to be short-term only, and eventually they turn into nightmares. But beyond that, there's the philosophical question of, should we even be tampering with nature?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is not just hybridizing two things, not just, you know, mixing one type of apple with another type of apple tree. They're actually going in there and changing the genetic code of the cells, the reproductive cells, and they're putting animal genes into plants, even some genes taken from human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is so freakish. Not only is it freakish, I think they're tampering with something that is so big and powerful they can't even imagine what they're touching. And, you know, they could really mess up this planet really bad. And if they do, it's permanent. There's no returning from it. So
yeah.
I think philosophically, it's really a bad idea also.
Yes, well, I agree with you on that 1,000%. And, of course, that's why they have a seed vault in, I think it's Reykjavik, Sweden. Which has been established with non-GMO seeds that are, you know, they have everything under the sun there. But, of course, who knows who has real access to that seed vault in the event that things go awry. I suspect that things have already gone awry and that they've lost control and that the tail of the dog, the tail is wagging the dog.
Yes, well, what good is it to have a seed vault with all of these heritage seeds if the new strains that have been developed are aggressive and they will outcompete the original seeds and destroy them?
Well, if you have underground bases where you can
press
a button and go to, you're not so concerned about those questions.
Well,
are you?
That might be good for a few people, but that's my point exactly, Vance. I mean, they're messing with something so big and powerful.
Yes.
That might be the future of mankind, underground caves, who knows?
Well, that's true. And then, of course, you have nanotechnology where they're trying to mix microchipping and nanotechnology with the human body. So that's on the horizon as well. There are all kinds of interesting combinations that they're trying to come up with that they're supposed to be for the benefit of mankind or for the enhancement of our intelligence. But
it looks like as the human race we could use a lot of enhancement right now.
Yes,
with people. Yeah, especially at the top.
Well, yes, thank you very much. Well, if they take the fluoride out of the water, and that's another issue that we could bump upon, and that is the fact that the corporations want to privatize water. They've practically done it already. They're selling water in bottles.
Yeah.
And they're even adding fluoride to the water in the bottles so that, you know, if we don't get a sufficient dose in our water or our toothpaste or the hundreds of other products that fluoride is put into, it's even in baby food. And it's been proven that it calcifies the pineal gland and that it dumps people down. They used it in Nazi Germany on the people to keep them dumbed down, among other things. But
yeah, keeps them docile, very docile. And so,
yeah,
well, you know, I think you came up with a great money-making idea there, Vince. What are we going to do with all of this radiation toxic stuff from Fukushima? Put it into the toothpaste and sell it. Yeah, we can.
Well, that's not so far-fetched, because guess what they're doing with some of the metal from the nuclear destruction that's gone on? They're reviving it and putting it into belt buckles and metal things that we have to wear.
Yeah, there you go. See, these people are smart.
Yeah, they'll probably make jewelry out of it, and it'll be a big hit.
Yeah, especially for nighttime bicyclists. They won't have to carry any lights.
Well, yes. Well, that's there again. You just hit upon another invention. They're putting fluorescent bioengineering fish so that they glow in the dark.
Yeah, easier to catch at night.
We'll need them when we're wandering around with no teeth and no hair.
Right.
Source all over our
well, body. You know, as I said before, it can get funny, but it's deadly serious, all of this. And I don't know. It just wears you out thinking about it.
Yeah.
The real issue is what are we going to do about it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's why I formed Freedom Force International, because we do have to do something. It's not enough just to know what's going on, not enough to wring our hands and say, golly, this is terrible. And we just have to take back control of the system, get it out of the hands of these maniacs.
Yes, and they are maniacs and psychopaths.
Yeah. Yeah, and the only way to do that is to go back into the power centers of society and recapture them one by one, just the way we lost them. And by that, I'm talking, of course, about the political parties and the labor unions and the media centers and the church organizations, all of these groups that people belong to. You look at them, and the most powerful ones have people at the heads of them who really like what's going on. They're the ones who are making it happen.
Yep.
And that is our problem. We have to replace those people.
Yes, yes, boy. Now that's a mind-boggling task. But you're right. It absolutely, because if we don't change what the people that are dictating literally to the rest of us, then we're going to be stuck with the same problems over and over and over, which keep recurring with different names. They simply put a new name to it, and then it becomes something that we all accept and admire. And everything has become topsy-turvy and reversed. So I agree with you on that one, too. That's just, I don't know how that's going to occur, but I think people need to start talking about it in groups like freedomforceinternational.org.
Yes, and, we're not only talking about it. We've got the plan. We think it's the plan, and it's already beginning to work. Plenty of examples come into our office every week of where people have been able to recapture control a little bit here, a little bit there. It's starting very slowly. You get a letter from somebody say, well, my husband and I decided to quit complaining and go to work, and I just got elected to the school board last week, and he's running for mayor, and you know, things like that.
Wonderful.
And this is how it has to happen.
And, you know, the grassroots is always where things are effectively remodeled, because it sometimes it takes just a child. There was a little girl that was growing food, and she had an enormous cabbage, and she started donating the food to the hungry. And it's now an enormous business, and they're feeding thousands of people, and other people have used that as a template or as a model.
Mm-hmm.
One of my guests, Julian Rose, in Poland, was successful in banning GMOs from Poland. And they have GMO-free zones over there. They're doing wonderful work. And, these are things that are happening. And it's important for us to look at these things, because we don't have to reinvent the wheel.
We don't.
There are successful things. Detroit, there's a man there that's teaching ghetto kids how to go into organic gardening. And these are the stories that are really heartwarming when you see the results. And, you know, you see kids turn around by putting their hands in the soil and reconnecting with nature. So, yes, there are solutions, and we've talked about some of the problems, and we need to know that solutions are right in front of us, and they're as close as they're our own hands, you know?
Yeah, right.
We just need to take responsibility for ourselves and stop pushing everything off onto the government, and you know, it's just time for us to take our power back, and I really admire what you're doing with Freedom Force International. So that's an important place where we can go to find solutions and where we can take action. One of the things I wanted to ask you before we have to wrap up is, of these multiple problems that we face today, what in your eyes, when you look out at this sea of situations that are brewing like a boiling frog in a pot, what is the most glaring to you that needs to be brought to our attention?
I think it may not be the most glaring, and that's the problem. It is the least glaring, but it is the most fundamental, and that is the faith that most people have learned to acquire in the system that we have, which is collectivism. Sometimes people use the word communism. They say fascism, Nazism, communism, socialism, all these words floating around. Let's call it what it really is. Those other words are merely variants of one fundamental ideology. It's called collectivism, the idea that the group is more important than the individual, that the individual must be sacrificed, if necessary, for the greater good of the greater number, and all of that argument. That is at the heart of almost all of our problems that we're facing today. Because no matter what comes up, people will say, well, that's a big problem, isn't it? What we need now is more government power, you know, to solve this problem. They never go the other way and say, no, we need less government power, because the government is what is really creating the problem, using coercion and denying freedom and so forth. They don't understand, in other words, what really is causing all these problems. And that's not a glaring issue, because nobody ever talks about collectivism or its opposite, individualism. They don't think philosophically. They don't have a foundation. They all want to be free. And you ask, okay, you want to be free? What is freedom? And you get a blank look. Well, freedom is your job. Well, it's doing what you want to do, right? No, it's a little deeper than that. Most people think freedom or being free is not being in jail. You know, that's about as far as it goes. They have no idea what it takes to make a free society. And so to answer your question, Vince, I think the most important problem is to get people to think about this fundamental basic philosophy that is really causing all of this. Because, you know, we have leaders that are pushing us in the direction we don't like. And we think, well, the reason he's doing that or she's doing that is because he's a bad person. So all we got to do is just get rid of that bad person and get a good person in place. We'll replace Bush with Obama, or we'll replace him with somebody else. And just looking at personalities, get rid of the bad people. They don't realize that bad people are bad because of what they believe. And if you get rid of one bad person and replace him with another person who believes the same thing, he's going to be just as bad or worse. Back to philosophy again. And so my answer is that I think the most important issue for us to address is for us all to get on the same page, is to understand what makes a free society, what makes an abundant society, what makes it the kind of a world that we want to live in, and focus on that. And then we can turn to issues and we'll know which way to go.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, we're just about out of time, and I wanted to have enough time for you to mention where people can find you and where they can catch up. You have some wonderful CDs that can help people get up to speed on all of this information. And so I would just want to thank you for being on tonight, and I do hope that you'll come back and we can investigate more into this question that you're asking and get into the philosophy behind it.
Yes, that's so important. But well, thanks for the opportunity to talk about my websites, the commercial site where we have things to sell. We have about 100 different book titles and recordings, DVDs, and that kind of thing. It's called Reality Zone. So it's really easy, realityzone.com. Also on that site, you'll find a place to get a pre-subscription to our news report called Unfiltered News. You can find that at the Reality Zone. And then our Freedom Force organization, where we don't have anything to sell except ideas, and where people get together and decide we're going to change the world. We're not going to just complain about it. I hope everybody wants to go there. And that's freedomforceinternational.org. freedomforceinternational.org.
Well, wonderful. Ed, thank you so much for being on tonight and for sharing your thoughts and feelings, which I mirror my own. And I would like to have you back anytime that you'd like to come back and talk some more.
Well, thank you, Vincent. It's a pleasure, and I'd be glad to do that. And you keep up the good work.
Oh, wonderful. Thanks a million, Ed.
Okay.
And good night.
Bye.
And good night, everybody.